Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. If you're not familiar with my show, I'd like to direct you to my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. That's getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And if you're not familiar with KUCI, you can visit kuci.org and see our eclectic mix of incredible programming from music shows, public affairs shows. Great mix of talent here at the station. All right, standing by to kick off the second half of the show is Greg Chasen, and he is the author of Flawed, Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management. It comes out April 16th. Drawing on his work as a renowned psychologist and expert in cognitive behavioral therapy, Chasen reveals that perfectionism is not the asset many employers think it is. Although managers might seek out perfectionists for their work ethic and attention to detail, their high standards can also result in inefficiency, toxic work environments, and dysfunctional relationships. He's here with us right now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Did I pronounce your last name correctly? Chasen.
Chasen.
Oh, Chasen. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. I get that all the time, so I'm used to it.
So tell me how this idea of this book came about.
Well, it's been a few years in the making. I've been wrestling with the idea of perfectionism for quite some time, both professionally, and then I don't think you can write a book like this without having some intimate knowledge of it in your personal life as well.
Sure.
So I've seen perfectionism take its toll at various levels of people's lives for many years, and I'm a professor at the University of Chicago, which seems to attract a certain pedigree of individual, and they tend to show up with a lot of perfectionism, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Sure.
And so I essentially treat a lot of the family and friends and people at the University of Chicago, as well as the community of Chicago more generally, and do research with this community, and I see perfectionism coming out of my ears all the time. And I thought, it's time. It's time to start sending a message about how to think about perfectionism, how to think about achievement, how to think about values and worth in a way that's not so toxic.
So I can't help but think about students applying to college, and
yep.
They have made so many sacrifices. They have the 4.6 GPAs, which I never saw. They've taken AP classes, they've sacrifices, they've been pushed maybe by parents, maybe not, maybe they've just always pushed themselves. Then they make those videos they put on TikTok, and they're crying that they got in, or maybe they're not. Maybe their mental health plummets because they've put so much focus on perfectionism. That then spills over into college, which then spills over into work. Would you say that's one of the root issues we're dealing with?
I think that's absolutely the way to think about it. I don't think they ever course correct. They've been reinforced, rewarded for this sort of overkill strategy and overvaluing achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a message that they've received either internally or from outside sources for, you know, years since they were a child. I think around the age of adolescence is when it starts to become apparent that we cannot do everything at 110% without there being some major cost. And I think that people with perfectionism have a very difficult time being flexible and understanding that point. And so they keep blitzkrieging everything that they do, but things then fall by the wayside. They can't keep up. You know, productivity starts to suffer. And then they have this terrible internal feeling about how they can't achieve what they quote unquote should achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get them either achieving it, which they're crying online, or they're not achieving it, which they're crying online. So there's a lot of crying online, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's almost like you have two people in a kitchen, you give them a recipe, and mm-hmm. one person says, oh, we don't have butter, we ran out of butter. And someone says, mm-hmm. I'm going to use applesauce. And the person's like, we can't do that. Like, it has to be this way. It's going to be lousy. And when you do a taste test, it tastes even better. How do we correct that? Is it that we also are so focused on work and we forget how to lighten up in so many ways and be creative and think outside the box?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great analogy. I don't know that I would put applesauce in certain things, but yeah, it's a great analogy because, you know, and I talk about this in my book, Flawed, is it stifles creativity. Perfectionism is, you know, absolutely sabotages creativity. It forces you to stay within certain boundaries and not to push the boundaries. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely just drowns creativity. And it's unfortunate because I think a lot of businesses, a lot of employers and leaders in the business sector, and even in the education with kids, they're looking for creativity, looking for critical thinking and thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
Some of our biggest paradigm shifts have come from that kind of creativity. You know, there's a time and a place for staying in the boundaries, coloring in the lines, and then there are times where you just want to scribble all over the page because that's what's needed.
Yes. Well, as we get older, we forget how to play or we don't make time to play. And by that, it could mean anything. It could be things that de-stress you so you're not that perfectionist person, or just having the ability to think differently.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to put that into action, but the basics are pretty straightforward, right? We want to incorporate more flexible thinking in our processes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very difficult task to do that, but if you can practice it and start to integrate flexibility into your thinking, it will open you up. I think a lot of fear underlies the unwillingness to color outside the lines.
Mm-hmm.
We're so worried about what happens to us if we don't abide by the rules, or if we, you know, go beyond what was asked of us and don't do something right.
Yes.
Or what if we fail, and imposter syndrome. I think that there's so much fear underlying all of this, and a lot of my book discusses how to tackle that fear from a leadership standpoint, because if you don't address the fear, you're not addressing the most important ingredient in the room. And so I think that that fear drives a lot of the behavior, from procrastination to other types of avoidance to excessive reassurance seeking, constantly checking in with people. How am I doing? Did I do that right?
Yes.
You know, these kinds of things can really make an environment toxic. And there are strategies for reducing some of that and opening up your mind and being more flexible and thinking outside the box.
Could you talk about that? Maybe share some of these strategies?
Yeah, one of them sort of drives home the point that it's okay to make mistakes, but not only is it okay to make mistakes and capitalize on those, I actually encourage people to make mistakes on purpose.
Ah.
And when people hear that, they think that I'm just sort of, you know, doing some sort of shock thing, but I actually do this. It's called exposure therapy.
Okay.
For those that have ever done exposure therapy, this will immediately hit home. But you have people engage in increasingly difficult tasks where they are asked to make mistakes, and they have to sit with that anxiety, with the potential consequences. There has to be some element of risk, or it's not really an exposure exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do this enough times and they work their way up, they start to learn. They start to increase their flexibility in their thinking. They're able to start to understand that they are overvaluing their thoughts around mistakes, and their behaviors are not necessarily doing anything to help them avoid mistakes. Sometimes it actually makes it worse.
Yes.
A self-fulfilling prophecy, there's a certain irony there, right? If you're
sure.
Checking your homework assignment so many times that you don't even turn it in on time and you end up losing, you know, a grade, that's irony at its finest, right? Self-fulfilling
right.
prophecy.
Yes.
And so really it's about loosening up, increasing flexible thinking, leaning in to the prospect of making mistakes, and then actually doing them on purpose and sitting with the consequences of that and learning that you can tolerate it and it's not as catastrophic as you think it is.
Yes. In a lot of the work I do, I'll always say when you do something else besides your work, you get into that flow state, you do something to just have a mental vacation, you come back to whatever it is you've been struggling with, your work situation, and you're better off.
Yeah, I mean, you can absolutely get those flow states can be pretty amazing, right? And
mm-hmm.
and they can be a force for good. The thing is, though, they need to be strategic, right? If you come back and you've been using that to avoid the things
yeah.
that need to get done,
yes.
then it could be a real problem. I see that a lot, right? And it's really a beautiful tool if it's used in the right way, but it also can be used for the forces of evil, in that it can push things that are important to the side and allow you to avoid.
Definitely. So yeah. Here at UC Irvine, there might be some students listening, and I'll say to them from time to time, you know, the college experience is not just academics.
Right.
And let's say, you know, you're not getting those straight A's, but what are you doing outside of the classroom to grow, to learn, who you are and what you like, and having connection, because the pandemic caused a lot of issues with social connection, and now there's anxiety and depression and lack of connection. So could you offer any insight to students, because those are the students that could end up in the workplace with a heavy dose of perfectionism? Any advice for moving on post-graduation?
Yeah, I would say just one word, and I would say it over and over again until it's stuck in their head, and that's values. Values, 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 right? What is it that is important to you? What are the values that are guiding your behavior, your decisions, your task prioritization? And if all you're valuing is achievements and getting that grade and getting that next job and that next step and doing well, it's not a bad thing, but I think it's time to diversify the values in your life and start to create relatively stronger values that can be a source of enrichment and can provide more purpose.
Yes.
And I would say use your values as a compass for what it is that you pursue and how you behave and how you address any sort of thoughts that pop in your head. And there's nothing wrong with valuing your success and valuing achievement and, you know, valuing even money is fine and all those things, but I like to encourage people to diversify their values and then use those as a compass. And I see a lot of kids these days in college who they just don't have a diverse set of values. Maybe it's from being in their home and lacking that social connection during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But I encourage them to really foster those social connections, because I think that that's a value that's often underappreciated and underdeveloped.
Yes. Have you found that a lot of students are saying it's been hard for them to make those social connections? Because I know I have.
Oh, absolutely. They're hard enough already, even before COVID. I mean,
yeah.
Building social connections and feeling like you're part of a group and belonging is so critical, and it's always been challenging. And I think that COVID and all that came with it just intensified all of that and made it so much harder. And I think that means that there's even more work to be done to get, you know, this generation back on track. And what do they have to sort of embrace and hold on to? Well, the formula, the rules, the, okay, let's get this homework assignment done. Let's focus on this. I mean, it's right there. It's concrete. It's in front of you.
Yes.
And it's easier than building this more abstract, scary social connection concept. And so I think that there's work to be done. I mean, I think this generation lost a lot in the last few years.
What's nice is I can hear the empathy and the compassion in you, where sometimes I talk to people and they'll say, oh, it's fine, and I had it rough in my day, and I went through X, Y, and Z. But, you know, it's a pandemic, and this generation is very passionate about the future, as they should be, and all the issues they inherited. And now with the loss of all these milestones and experiences and the social connection and the stress of cell phone usage and the addiction of cell phone usage and all that goes along with it, it's just created a lot of issues. And when I see, you know, articles, generations are behind academically, it's like, well, no kidding. But do we have to focus on that so much?
Right. I would be much more worried about the social human component.
Yes, the mental health and well-being, yeah.
I mean, we all know that the half-life of knowledge, you learn it and it's out the other ear almost instantly. But developing that social connection and learning how to think critically and how to build relationships, that stuff is unbelievably fundamental. And I think that ought to be the focus.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I don't know that it always is. But yeah, the compassion comes relatively easy in the sense that I'm seeing patients all the time who come in, and they're teenagers and young adults. I have my own kids, 14 and 12. I see the world that they're growing up in, and there's not a moment that I think, oh man, you'll be fine. You totally just, you know, you have it easy compared to what I did. Back in my day, we did this. And back in, I mean, this is a new set of challenges in a totally different world, and they have some serious stressors in front of them, and
Yes.
I talk to people who've been bullied, and, you know, getting bullied back in the 90s or early 2000s was a totally different experience than getting bullied now. And if people don't understand that, then I think that they're just, I think they're willfully sort of keeping themselves in the dark, keeping their head in the sand.
I agree. I attended the UCLA Friends of the Semmel Institute's Gen Z Summit, and it was so eye-opening. I can send you the link after the show. And all
That'd
the videos
great.
Are up there, and they had panels that were 15, 20 minutes, and they had some famous actresses like Lily Reinhart, and they had sports figures and musicians and artists. But they talked about and even performed spoken word poetry, for example, or sang a lot of the issues that they struggle with, and it was probably, I think, over 700 people attended. It was phenomenal.
Wow, yeah. I think there's a lot of people who are talking about this right now. I think it's a hot topic in the discourse, and we'll see where it goes.
I agree. We were talking about work-life balance. Teaching that at a young age, as you can see in the work you do, is so important.
Oh, absolutely. And especially with more and more research coming out in the education sector showing that homework, for example, doesn't correlate all that well with outcomes. And when your kid is sitting there for 5 hours doing homework after spending 6 hours in school, and you're thinking to yourself, what is the point of all of this?
Yes.
And they can't see the big picture as well because they're young and maybe they're not. Their frontal lobe hasn't fully developed yet, and they're stuck in this sort of toxic achievement culture, as Jenny Wallace talks about. And it's just this really, you know, unfortunate hamster wheel that these kids get put on, and as a parent, you're not really sure what to do about it, but you're seeing it. You see them just running this marathon, and you're wondering why.
Right, why? Yes.
Yeah, why?
It's, you know, at the end of the day, if your A's went to B's or even C's, you're still going to get your degree.
Right. What do they say? C's get degrees?
Yeah, exactly. That was me.
Right.
You know,
in grad school, was a good dissertation is a done dissertation?
Yes, seriously. You nailed that one. Anything else you'd like us to know about your book?
I think the last thing I always like to end on is just to give a little bit of a positive note here. Most people get really disturbed or anxious when they get called out as being a perfectionist. And I often get questions like, what should we do about this? Should we root them out of the system? Should we make sure we don't hire people with perfectionism? What do we do? Mm-hmm. And my question is, or my answer is always, absolutely not. I mean, this is not a witch hunt. Perfectionists tend to be some of the most valuable people that you'll have on your team. They're conscientious, they're loyal, they're extremely hardworking, they tend to be very honest. They are exactly what you're looking for in a team member. And so I would never encourage people to rule them out or exclude them on the basis of perfectionism. The book is about creating an environment and working with individuals with perfectionism in a way that minimizes the impact of that mentality and hopefully shifts it. That would be ideal. But then also leverages their strengths to the advantage of everyone. It's a win-win.
Right. There's a way to be, I don't know if this is an oxymoron, a healthy perfectionist. Like, I look at my life and I think sometimes I feel like I'm this, I have an athlete's mindset because I was an athlete growing up and in college. And the way I treat myself, my mental, physical, emotional health, it prepares me to do the work I have to do. But I have balance. I figured that out.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're describing, so I actually talk about this in the book, Flawed, is there are people who do research and work with perfectionism who believe that there's a healthy version of this. I personally don't hold that opinion. I think perfectionism is defined by rigidity and unreasonable expectations. Mm-hmm. And if those things are not present, then I don't think it's perfectionism. I think you're talking about things that are flexible. You're talking about high standards, but not necessarily perfectionistic tendencies or expectations.
Sure.
So I tend to see perfectionism as a problem, but there are people out there who see a healthy version of this. I don't see it that way. I just think then if we're talking about healthy perfectionism,
that is an oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're talking about something different.
No, you're right.
But you'll get different takes on that depending on who you talk to. I think what that does is it rationalizes or justifies perfectionistic
tendencies.
True.
That's true.
And I think you can do just as well, if not better, with flexible high standards than with perfectionism.
I think it's more interesting to be flexible to, you know, my first job, someone said, do you do well with ambiguity? And I said, yes. And they hired me. Mm-hmm. Because the unexpected and how you deal with the curveballs of life are so important.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that's what perfectionism really is all about, is it's this false impression or this fantasy of control over things that just aren't controllable. And so when people put in so much effort, exert so much energy to try to control all these variables, it really is just a sort of a self-reassurance. It's not really feasible or doable. Mm-hmm. And it is a way of controlling that uncertainty that you just described so well. Because we, you know, humans don't like uncertainty. And there is individual differences. Some people do better. It sounds like you do. But the people who don't, they'll find whatever they can to magically try to control the variables and have some what they think is predictability, but it's really not. And I think it ends up causing way more barriers and causes way more problems.
Yeah.
I often tell people it's about the best use of control is sometimes giving up that control.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, really knowing how to pivot when things don't go the way you planned and to stay level-headed and, you know, as we said, think outside the box. That's a key to life, I would say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I'm about to go make lunch and I might add some applesauce.
I was talking about, like, if you're baking cookies, you can do that?
Yeah, no, I know. Actually,
not to, like, your tuna fish or anything, you know.
Yeah. Or you find that there's just bizarre ingredients and things like sour cream and you never would have guessed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Somebody had to have done that at some point. Either it was an accident or they were getting creative.
Yes. Yes. So where can people find out more about you and your book?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So you can find out more about me at my website, gregchasson.com. C-H-A-S-S as in Sam, O-N as in Nancy. And you can find out more about the book at flawedbook.com, which is a bit of an unfortunate URL, but it is what it is. Flawedbook.com. And you can get a couple of free chapters right now if you go over there. And then next week when the book is released, it will also navigate you to where you can purchase the book.
Fantastic. And I put all your information on my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And let me just tell you a quick little story. So I started this show in 2011 after I lost a friend of mine, and that was my pivot. That was my way of dealing with grief mm-hmm. and moving through grief, but also allowing people to share stories and insight and advice on how we build resilience in life.
I think resilience is the key in it. You know, not everyone's going to be able to get on the radio and do what you've done, but I think they can find their own meaning and their own way of building
exactly.
that resilience.
Yes. This conversation will be up on the show blog within an hour after I wrap, and I want to thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much. Take care.
That was Greg Chasson, whose new book is coming out very shortly on the 16th. It's called Flawed, Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management. Lots of great lessons in this book. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. You can find out more about Greg by visiting the show blog. Again, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And the conversation will be up, as I mentioned, as a podcast within an hour. And I'm wrapping up very shortly. If you want to find out more about my show, again, visit the blog. And if you want to find out about being a guest, you can shoot me an email to Janeane, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at kuci.org. And I hope you enjoyed today's show. I'll be back next week. I'm going to be featuring the Pacific Marine Mammal Center. I had a conversation with the CEO and a few other folks. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. And I'll have another guest as well. You can learn more about KUCI by visiting www.kuci.org and our socials at KUCI-FM. Happy Wednesday, and I'll be back next week. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.